Okay, we're beginning here on the last line of Nun Ched Amud Bet. The Gemara is asking with regards to the language of the Mishnah. It says, "Mishnah Hocha Diktani Haomer L'Chaviro." What does our Mishnah use as the example or the case? A case where he says to his friend, "Say V'Kadesh Li'Isha Plonit," that his agent is his friend, and it doesn't say Shliach, but rather it says Chaviro. Mishnah Hotam, and back on Daf Nun, when we had the Mishnah, it says, "Diktani Haomer L'Shlucho." There is a case where he says to his agent, go out and be Mikadesh and Isha for me in such a location. So why is it that here it uses Chaviro and over there it uses Shlucho? Is there any significance to that? Over here it's teaching us a Chiddush, somewhat along the lines of what you're saying. And also over there there's a Chiddush. If it was the word Shliach, which is a generic agent, Havaminu Shluchohu Davi Ramai. When it says shliach, then that is a ramai. The samcha date sava avadli shluchuti. Because a person relies on a shliach, we have a principle in general that a person can rely on a shliach, that shliach ose shlichuto. And therefore there is fiduciary duty from the agent back to this individual. So as the fact that he's relying on him, then we call him a ramai when he does it for his own benefit instead of the benefit of the principal who sent him. Aval chavirot lo samcha date. When it's his friend, he's doing him a favor. He doesn't know. Is he really going to do it? Is he going to take care of it? Maybe there he shouldn't be considered or deemed a cheater or a deceptive individual because he didn't send him as an official agent. He sent him as a favor. And then if the guy took care of himself, okay. So that's the Kamash Malon, that even the Chavero was called the Ramai over here. And this type of practice is not acceptable. It's deceptive in nature. Hotam Rebuta Kamashalan over there in the Mishnah on Daf Nun, the Itana Omer the Chaviro, had it written in Chaviro over there, Hava Mina Chaviro, who, Techi Kadshe B'Makom Acher, Eina Mikudeshet. The Mishnah there is speaking about a case where he directs him to a certain location to go be Mikadesh the Isha. So there, if he goes to that location, it goes through. If he goes to an alternate location, we say that it does not go through. So now, when he does it in another location, then we would have said, Eina Mikudeshet, the Savar Lo Taroch. Because he assumes that the friend is not going to undertake that extra tircho or that extra effort to go to the other location. And therefore he limits his shlichut, his agency with his friend to a particular location. It's as if he said that if you don't do it here, you don't have agency for me anymore. Ava shlucho, the tarach. But when he has an agent who will undertake or is more likely to undertake that extra diligence in doing this, Ema mare makom hulo. Then maybe you could argue that he's just giving him the location where he thinks the woman will be found, or where he thinks it might work out. But maybe if it was somewhere else, he would think that it's fine also. Kamash Valon, that even when you use the shliach, if he gives you a specific location, you're limited to that location. The agency is qualified by that location, and he can't go somewhere else and be mekadesh tisha. Now the Gemara continues, Ravina Chasida, and there is an alternate girsa here, which is Rav Amram Chasida, Azel Ikdushe Le Itzita Libre, went out to marry a woman on behalf of his son, Kidshel Nafshe, and instead he married the woman for himself. Now first of all, it's interesting that the father is going out on behalf of the son, because we already saw earlier, and Tosfot raises this, that Lo Chotzif Inish Dimishavi Avi Shliach. Person is not mechutzof enough to make his father into his agent for go to marry for him. And therefore we don't assume that a father would be acting as an agent on behalf of his son. But first of all, he can't do it on his own because the son has to appoint out of, there's no kiddushin for a katan. And the father doesn't have rights when the child is a gadol to marry him off. So if he's not acting as an agent, then he can't act on behalf of his son. So Tosfot brings over here what the Gemara basically says over there, which is, that the son was bemoaning or telling his father about this woman that he really wanted to marry. He never asks him formally to go and do it, but there's an assumption that if his father would do it, he would be very happy about it. And so therefore, there's an implied shlichut, an implied agency here, but not a directed agency. Nevertheless, the father here, whether it's Ravina Chasida or Rav Amram Chasida, married the woman for themselves. Va'atanyo. We quoted in yesterday's daf that what you do, what's done is done. Meaning that she's married to the other party, but that's deceptive behavior. That's not acceptable behavior. So how is it possible here that they did that? Lo yavua nihale. So Mar says that they were unwilling to give the woman for his son. They said that we're not going to marry off our daughter to your son. So now he didn't have any choice. Right? So he says, Ibayale lo doi. So then he should have informed his son. He should have returned to his son, said they're not willing to offer this woman on your behalf. Are you okay with me going and married, or at least letting him know that he's no longer acting on his behalf? He thought that in the interim, he might lose the woman. So obviously this was a well-sought-after woman, and his son was interested. They were unwilling to take his son, and he was afraid that she was such a hot item that if he left to go tell his son the information, she might be gone by the time he got back, and therefore he married her on the spot for himself. So that would not be technically remote, because he couldn't act on behalf of his son. They were unwilling to give it to his son. We'd say maybe in terms of from the spirit of the law, in a sense that he should have indicated to his son, but because of the conditions here, he was unable to do that, and therefore what he did was considered okay. All right. But the one question here is about, and this is a more general, generic question we've dealt with before in the sugyot, in Moed and in Sota, about the fact that isn't the shidduch, or the woman that a person's going to marry, already predetermined? And so then why is he worried that someone's going to jump the gun over here? That's a more generic question, because we have that halacha with regards to the 3 weeks and other times when you're not allowed to get married, but there you're allowed to establish a rishiyon shema yikad menu acher, because maybe somebody else will jump the gun. And so the answer here is one of two possibilities, which are the way that the Rishonim deal with it in those places as well. One is based on the Gemara in Sota, which says that that is b'zivik rishon, b'zivik sheni. By zivik rishon, it's predetermined. By zivik sheni, it's through the merits of the individual. And therefore, you do have a chance that you could lose this woman, or that the shidduch might not go through if you don't take care of it right away. Or the other possibility, which is brought by some of the Rishonim in Tanit, which is that if he's marbe b'tfila, if he davens really hard, he might be able to upgrade. He might be able to do a little better. And so therefore, there is a risk that even though a person is predetermined to be together with someone else, that sometimes you can jump the line, or you can get over the hurdle by davening hard. So there are ways to upend what would otherwise been this kviut of the shidduchim. Obviously, it has a domino effect, because if you jump the line here, then Hashem has to reorganize everything else with the other individuals too. Alright. Rabba Bar Chana, Yayiv Le Zuzei L'Rav. Rabba Bar Chana gave money over to Rav. Amar Zavna Niali L'Hayara. Please purchase this land or piece of land for me. Azal Zavna L'Nafshe. Rav purchased it for himself. So again, here is seemingly a breach of his fiduciary duty as an agent to buy the land on behalf of Rabba Bar Chana, and he jumps the gun and buys it for himself. V'atanya Mashasa Asui L'Shinagbo Minagra Ma'ot. This seems similar to the case of the Kiddushin, where you're sent as a shliach, and instead of taking care of your principal, you take care of yourself. So yes, what is done is done, but nevertheless, that's a deceptive practice. So baga dalime havel. It was a field that belonged to strong men. The Rav Nagi Bei Kavod. They were respectful of Rav, who was considered to be the gadol ador at that time. Therefore, they were willing to sell it to Rav. The Rav Bar Chana lo Nagi Bei Kavod. With Rabbi Bar Chana, they weren't willing to sell to him. They didn't think he was of significant in nature or position, and therefore they were unwilling to sell it to him. So the same thing that we said before, Rav should have informed to Rabbi Bar Chana that he can't act on his behalf because they're unwilling to sell it to him. So that way, it wouldn't be deceptive. He would be clear that he's going to buy it. So he had the same problem as by the Kiddushin, that this was a property that was well sought after. And Rav says, if I can buy it, it's an opportunity to buy it. But these sellers are picky, whether they're picky about credit, whether they're picky about who buys the field, because they're going to be their next door neighbors. For every reason, they're very picky about who they sell it to. And they were unwilling to sell it to Rav Bar Chana, but they were willing to sell it to Rav. But if he tarried, if he went back and indicated to Rav Bar Chana that he couldn't do it, by the time he got back, that might not have been there. And therefore, he seized the moment and he bought it on the spot. The circumstances can determine whether how deceptive the practice is. Which is that, of course, if he could have acted on behalf of his principal and he does it for himself, it's clear there that he's deceptive. Now, if they won't give it to the other party and they will give it to the agent, then if they're not going to do that, you should at least inform the individual that you're no longer acting as his agent and you're acting on behalf of yourself. That's just nice, that's proper etiquette. And that would remove any deceptiveness of the practice, because you're making it clear that you're not acting on behalf of the shliach. But there are circumstances where you don't have time to do that. I mean, that you have to seize the moment. And therefore, I don't think the practice is deceptive. We just demand of you as much as possible to make it clear to the other party that you're not acting on their behalf. But if it's going to be lost to the other party anyway, they're not going to get it, miman of shach, then why should it matter that you took it? So that's the answer of the Gemara, that they hear the circumstances warranted the action of these parties. Rav Gidol was taking a look at this piece of land. Obviously, to buy it, he was looking at buying it. Azal Rabbi Abba and Zavno. Rabbi Abba got ahead of him and bought it. Azal Rav Gidol, Kabbalah the Rabbi Zeira. Rav Gidol went and complained to Rabbi Zeira about Rabbi Abba's actions, his behavior. Azal Rabbi Zeira, Kabbalah the Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcho. Rabbi Zeira went and brought the complaint before Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcho. Amrlei, Hamtein, Achiyaleh, Alisainu LeRegel. Wait until he comes up for the regel. Now obviously we're not speaking about the regel in the sense of Aliyah the regel, because we're talking about in Bavel. This is a story in Bavel. Yep. And even though Rav Gidol later on in his life moves to Eretz Yisrael, seemingly this story is with parties that are in Bavel, and this story is taking place in Bavel. So what you have to suggest is, along the lines of what Fred just said, which is, it's a mitzvah to go up to your Rebbe on the regel. Now, the truth is that as far as Rav Gidol is concerned, these individuals are not his Rebbeim. Rav Gidol learned by Rav. We know that Rav Gidol Marav is found all over Shas. And later on, he learned a little bit by, I think, Rav Huna, Rav's Talmud, and then moved to Eretz Yisrael. And the same is true for Rabbi Abba. So these aren't his Rebbeim, but nevertheless, he might have come to the Va'ad, or the major location where all the Rabbonim were, on the Regel. Maybe that was the practice, or that he would come to the place where his Rebbe is, and they would also happen to be there. Whatever the reason is, they assumed that they would meet him on the Regel. Kisalek Ashkechei. So when he came up, they bumped to Rabbi Abba. You have an ani who is looking at or working with a piece of bread, and then someone else comes and snatches it away from him. What's the din about this individual? He's a evil, terrible individual. Here you have an ani. That's a key element here. He's an ani. He's a poor person. And he seemingly gets his hands on something that he could utilize. And then you come in, snatch it out of his hands. That's a rasha. If you go somewhere else, you take some, let this guy have what, at least what he found. Rashi claims over here that the case is a case of hefker. That mechazer acharei l'skopam in a hefker. He was trying to get this from a hefker. Oshit nena lo balabait. So Rashi gives two scenarios. One is a scenario of hefker, and one's a scenario of someone else. He's working with the balabait to secure a deal. And I mean, cut in and take the deal away from him. Or he's working with hefker, and then you come in and sweep it away. So Rashi claims that in both those cases, that's aniyam apech b'charura, and you need to walk away from it. That you don't have a right to take it away from him, because he's an ani, and he's already indicated interest in this situation or scenario, and you should, obviously, respect that. What's clear from this is that Rav Gidol, even though he's not poverty-stricken, but he was an ani, and that he could have used this piece of land, and therefore they're comparing him to Aniyam Apech Bicharara, that he was, somebody was working with these individuals. Now, Ani doesn't have to literally be, again, someone who is poverty stricken, it's someone who needs work, somebody who needs opportunities. And therefore that might be enough of a reason to tell you to stand back when someone else has already made the first move on this opportunity. Now, he is Nikra Rasha, which means that officially, whatever you've done is done, and you can do this, and your activities are halakhically binding, meaning that if you are hired for the job, you have to do it. The Rasha is a title for someone who acted inappropriately in the situation, but not that there is an absolute halakhic, right, problem with it, and therefore we're going to block your ability to interact or transact in this situation. Tosafot takes issue with Rashi and says that Aniyam Apech Bacharara does not apply to Hefker. And the key difference that he notes, and this is Rabbeinu Tam says, is that it depends on the uniqueness of the opportunity or the situation. Where there is something that's unique and opportunistic, then we don't say Aniyam Apech Bacharara, but rather we say first come, first serve. So in the case of Hefker, here you have a Mitziah that's out there, a Hefker that's out there. It's a unique item. There aren't millions of mitziot out there. There aren't millions of hefker property that's out there. And therefore, over there we say, kol kodem zocheh. Whoever gets it first, gets it first, because of the uniqueness of the opportunity. On the other hand, when it's dealing with a job, or an opportunity to buy something, where we can say to him, look, don't buy this, just go buy another piece of property, or go get the job somewhere else. In that case, we do apply aniyim pabech b'charara, because we say to him, why are you stealing the opportunity of the ani when there are plenty of other opportunities that are out there? And that obviously would raise the issue in any business situation is how unique is this opportunity? If this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, maybe it would not be deemed aniyim pabech b'charara. If it's a more generic opportunity, then aniyim pabech b'charara would say that you need to back off in situations where this person's already indicated interest or started down a path of engaging this individual to do something. Tosafot here categorizes different things, so he asks from other cases where seemingly there are problems with hefker, like fishermen. Over there, there are certain rules of how close you can get to the other guy's boat and the other guy's net, because you're taking his fish, but fish are hefker. So why don't over there, why do we say, or seemingly apply, aniyim pabech b'charara? Interestingly enough, Tosafot quotes from the Rabbeinu Meir, Aviv Shel Rabbeinu Tam. Which is interesting, as you know, usually just called the Rabbeinu Meir. Over here it's called Rabbeinu Meir, the father of Rabbeinu Tam. Just tells you how famous his son was, that they call the father by the son. Rabbeinu Meir is Rashi's son-in-law, and Rabbeinu Tam is Rashi's grandson, who's born to Rabbeinu Meir. He's the youngest son of Rabbeinu Meir. The Rashbam and the Revivam are the other two sons, the older brothers of the Rabbeinu Tam. So over here he says that that's a different situation, which is Yorei Dumunato. You're going after his profession. Which is there, he discusses the fact that they used to cut up a fish or put out bait that would draw the fish closer. And then if you come too close to his boat or his net, you're basically taking his fish because he put in the bait to get them there. And now you're coming and swiping the fish when it's his bait. So that's Yorei Dumunato. So there he says clearly that's problematic, Yorei Dumunato. In a case of hefker, in a case of mitziah where it's unique, over there, it's an open season. Anybody who gets it can get it. The only question is, if we're dealing with a generic situation, and in a generic situation, and where you have the equal opportunity to get the same thing somewhere else, we say to you, why do you take this guy's stuff? Just go somewhere else and get the other item. So that would open up the possibility that you have to discuss, there's going to be areas that are gray, is how unique the opportunity is versus how generic the opportunity is. And therefore, you could see room here, according to the Tosafot, where there would be a fine line. Tosafot brings examples of this. Where he says, as someone is a malamed, he's a teacher, and in those days, the way that they taught children was they got a private tutor that came to the house. So there's a malamed who's already engaged with this balabayit. You as a different malamed can't come in and try to displace the malamed that's already there. That's aniyim pabech b'charara, because it's already, so then you can't come and knock him out because he's already entrenched and he has a deal. And even if the balabayit wants to bring in someone else, you can't do it until the other party's gone. Now, if the balabayit specifically says, I'm going to fire this guy and hire him, then you don't have a problem because the balabayit's clear that this job is going to be open and therefore you're not competing against this guy. This guy is gone or he's going to be released anyway. Whereas the other way around, and this is addressing your issue, which is Tosafot says, if a malamed is hired by a family and another family wants to hire him and so they go to him and propose something to him and then he comes over to them, that is not a problem of aniyim pabech b'charara. Because over there, they can argue that this guy is the best mechanech out there, and we want him for our family. Not all teachers are going to succeed with our son. We think this guy is particularly unique and proper for our son. But you see here that there is an amount of uniqueness in circumstances where we do permit you to pick off the teacher and hire him, even though he's already hired by someone else. So that most of this revolves around, I would call it labor or day labor type of things, or questions where you have generic property that is being bought. There, that's called aniyim pabech b'charara. Because in those situations, you could just have easily gotten and replaced whatever you're trying to get somewhere else. And therefore, we say to you, just don't take away this guy's opportunity. In places where it's unique, like the hiring of a malamed, or mitzia, hefker, and that could be in a business dealing as well. This is the only deal of this type that's out there, or it's the type of job that will change the dynamic of whatever company gets it. All of those can be deemed to be unique enough that there is no din of aniyim pabech b'charara. And so you have to assess the situation properly and see, is this aniyim pabech b'charara, or is this not a case of aniyim pabech b'charara? So he gives the answer. You know, this is reminiscent of David HaMelech, when Natan HaNavi comes to him. And Natan HaNavi gives him a mashal after he took Batsheva, and David gives the psak halacha that motumat, that he has to die, and then Natan turns to him and says, Ataish, you're the man. So to over here, they ask Rabbi Ava of the question, he says he's a Rosho. And then basically he says, Ataish, you just did this. Elamar, my time Ovid Hochi. So why did you do that? That's exactly what you did to Rabbi Gidu. I'm like, Lovi Yadano. He said, I didn't know about it. He says, I just was unaware of the fact that Rabbi Gidu was looking at it. Hashanami Nitva Nehaleimar. So he says, okay, why don't you give it to him? So this is your proposal, David, which was, okay, if you do it for yourself and it was wrong, then why don't you buy it and then give it to the other individual? Sell it to Rav Gidol now. Because you bought it. He says, Amalei zvune lo mezvine la. He says, I will not sell it to him. Da'ara kamaitahi. It's my first buy. It's the first time I bought property. And, velo mesamna milta. It's not good mazel to sell your first property that you bought. So, because of that, I don't want to sell it. Ibai v'matana nishkale. But he was an upstanding and upright individual here. And he says, I will give it to him as a gift. I'm more than happy to give it to him as a gift, because that won't ruin my mazel. I understand that something wrong happened over here, unintentionally, but I do want to rectify the situation. I'm willing to give it to him as a matana. Rav Gidol lo nochid lo. Rav Gidol was unwilling to take it or accept it as a gift. Tichtiv v'sonei matanot yichyeh. One who despises or dislikes gifts lives a long life. So he didn't want to take it as a gift. Rabbi Ava lo nochid lo mishum da'afik ba Rav Gidol. Rabbi Ava no longer wanted to take the land or use the land because Rav Gidol had been looking at it, and even though he was unaware of it, now that he's aware of it, he wouldn't feel comfortable taking the land because Rav Gidol had looked at it. Lomar nachila v'lomar nachila. Neither of them were willing to go down to the land. Mitkaya ara de Rabbonon. And therefore it was called the land of the Rabbonon. It's a nice story. It's a beautiful story. I mean, in the end, nobody gets any utility out of it, but it's a nice story in the sense that they were respectful of each other and the halacha, and therefore neither one of them was willing to take the land in the end. Now, Rashi claims that Mitkari Ara Darabonon was Hefker the Talmidim. Not that simply it was called the land of Darabonon and just sat there, but it was Hefker the Talmidim, meaning that they allowed Talmidei Chachamim to benefit from it. So they could go and plant things on it, or they could go Mimitayel on it, that they gave it as, basically donated it to the Chachamim, or to the Talmidei Chachamim of the yeshiva, to utilize for their campus, in essence, instead of taking it for themselves. So that's the story of Rabbi Ava and of Rav Gidol. You are married to me after 30 days. Nobody else comes and jumps the line during the 30 days. Then at the end of the 30 days, Mahu, Rav Shmuel d'Armeitav, Vayu Mikudeshet. That it's Mikudeshet. What's the question? Vafu Pish Nitachlu Amaot. Even though the money is no longer extant. I mean, that he created here a deferred Kiddushin. So in creating a deferred Kiddushin, that means that the Kiddushin only go effective after 30 days. That means that on day 30, that's when the Kiddushin went effective. On day 30, you need the consideration that was given for the Kiddushin to be extant in order for the Kiddushin to go through. So now what happens if the money's gone? What exactly are they getting married with on the 30th day? He did give her money in the beginning, but that's irrelevant that he gave her money in the beginning, because it only goes effective on the 30th day. So if that money's not around anymore, how exactly is this Kiddushin happening on the 30th day? So Gemara says, my time. Ani zuzei lav de milve damu. They're not like a loan. Below the pikadon damu. And they're also not like a deposit. Le pikadon lo damu. They're not like a deposit. Pikadon birshuta de mara comment achle. Because a pikadon remains with the original owner, and if it was utilized, it was utilized in the ownership of the original party. When you deposit something with somebody, it's still yours. You still have ownership over it. And therefore, if it's not extant anymore at the time that the Kiddushin go through, the Kiddushin aren't going to work, because your item never transferred ownership over to this other party. It remained in your ownership. When it got consumed, it was consumed under your ownership. It never reached the woman. If it never reached the woman, there was no Kiddushin over here. So it's not like a pikadon, because he gave her the money at that time. He didn't deposit the money with her. He gave it to her. L'shem Kiddushin. And therefore, it's in her possession that the money was used up. So that's different than a pikadon, because a pikadon belongs to the original owner, whereas here the money is in her hands to do with it as she pleases. L'milva nami lo damu. It's also not like a loan. Because milveh lehotza nidna. Milveh is gone from the moment you hand it over. Which means that the milveh is the loan. The money itself is irrelevant because it's fungible with regards to the loan. As soon as you extend the credit to this woman and you give her the money for the loan, it's as if the money's gone. It's no longer yours. It's not in your hands. And you can't be mekadesh the isha with it because it's in her hands already. The credit and the money are in her hands. And she has no obligation then vis-a-vis you except to replace the fungible money that she owes. But the money itself that she's holding now, it's not yours anymore. Therefore, you can't be mekadesh b'milveh because the milveh is already out of your hands. So, hani b'torat kiddushin yavin ni'ala. Over here, you handed them to her, b'torat kiddushin, and not as a milveh, not as a loan. So, in that case, the reason that it works, and it's not totally clear, but the Gemara is implying this, is it's not a pikadon, so that means it did transfer ownership over to the woman. On the other hand, it's not like a milveh, where the ownership is so fully transferred over that you can't do anything anymore with the money, because it's already hers. So what you have here is somewhat of a in-between status, which is you hand her money, and the money becomes hers. And she can then expend the money. Since she can expend the money, she gets hana'ah from that expending of the money. That hana'ah is still around because it wasn't given as a milveh, it wasn't given as a loan, so that immediately all the hana'ah is realized immediately, but rather it's realized over time because she can utilize this money. That ability to utilize the money is the hana'ah, and that is probably the consideration by which she is getting married now. That hana'ah is still extant at the time that the 30 days come about. But what we're not going to require is that a pruta be there, that some of the money still be extant, because obviously if the money's there, then it's no problem, because then you can get married based on that pruta that still is there. And then if she expends all the money, there's still hana'ah that she got from the expending of the money. That hana'ah has a residual to it, and that residual you're allowed to get married with, and that'll be the consideration for the marriage. Now, the Rishonim here argue about the case of a shtar. That if he gave her a shtar and says that, after 30 days, and the shtar is ripped up or gone after 30 days, according to the Ramban and majority of the Rishonim, the marriage doesn't go through. Because then there really is nothing there. There's nothing residual extant at the time that the Kedushin goes effective for the Kedushin to happen. The shtar that generated the Kedushin is gone. So therefore, they believe that no chance there's Kedushin in that case. There are some Rishonim that say that maybe even in that case, by shtar, it could be that the Kedushin are effective. But what you see here is that there has to be something extant at the time that the 30-day point comes to generate the Kedushin. The effectiveness of the Kedushin is deferred, and therefore you need something at that point where the Kedushin go effective to be the consideration. So whether that's the money itself, the shtar itself that's still extant, or some sort of hana that derived from them that is still around at that time, then you can get married. If in any way there's nothing left of it, it's completely gone, then there's going to be no marriage. And that's why by the shtar, most of you shouldn't even believe that if it's gone, there is no marriage if it's not there at the 30-day point. Loba acher v'kidsha, if nobody else comes and jumps the gun and is mekadesher within that 30-day period, v'chazra ba, and then she backs out. Mahu, what is the din? So now the question of v'chazra ba, is that specific to the woman herself of backing out? Or is this a generic question and it applies to him as well? Can he back out? So there's some Rishonim who say that the question about him is not relevant because of course he can back out. He's the one generating the Kiddushin. So therefore he can always back out of it because he can pull the plug on the Kiddushin. On the other hand, Chazra Ba, the question is with regards to her. Since she already accepted, is she able to unwind an acceptance? That's really the question here. So some Rishonim suggest that by the Baal, it's not a question because it's so obvious. By the woman is the question. Others suggest that the question is equal to the Baal and the Isha over here. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Chozeret. Rabbi Yochanan says she can back out. Ati Dibor Mevatel Dibor. She accepted verbally. She can now reject it verbally. She can unwind what she did before. Rish Lakish Amar Eina Chozeret. Rabbi Rish Lakish says she cannot back out of it. Lo Ati Dibor Mevatel Dibor. A statement or a verbal statement cannot unwind a previous verbal statement. So Eitavei Rabbi Yochanan the Rish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan challenged Rish Lakish. Says, Bitel. Now, this is a case where someone appointed an agent to go be mafrish truma on his behalf. Bitel. He nullified the agency. Imad shalot taram bitel. If he nullified the agency before the shliach went ahead and took off the truma, ein trumato truma, then the truma is not effective because he lost his right as an agent before he actually carried out his agency. Obviously, if he catches it afterwards, then it doesn't matter because the shliach already acted and did the truma, and he can't reverse and nullify that after the fact. Over here, it's a verbal instruction to the shliach to take off the truma, and a verbal retraction of the agency. And here you see that the retraction of the agency is as effective as the appointment of the agency. Where it says, Shani nitinat ma'ot liyadisha dechima sedamu. So that that case of truma is slightly different. And what Rish Lakish does now is he slightly amends his position, alters his position, which is that when he says that ein dibor motzi midei dibor, that's not really true. It's not that simply one verbal instruction can back out another verbal instruction. That possibly could work, whether he's saying that in his own opinion or in the sheet of Rabbi Yochanan. But nevertheless, he says now that if the original verbal instruction involved a quasi-maseh, some sort of activity involved with it, it strengthens that first verbal instruction to the point where a latter verbal instruction cannot unwind it. As Rashi notes over here, so even though the kiddushin were not effective immediately, which means that there is no masa over here, it'd be one thing if he said hariyat mekudesh li, period. Then that's a verbal engagement, but it involves a maisa in action right away, where he's giving the ring or the money to the woman, he's becoming engaged to her. So over there, it's clear there's a masa. But over here, we delay the effectiveness of the kiddushin until the 38 days. So that means at the time that he said Ariyat Mikudesh Ali, the Achar Shloshim Yom, no Maisa happened at that moment. The Maisa is deferred until the time period where it goes effective at the 30th day. Despite the fact that nothing happens now, it's enough of a Maisa that will allow the Kedushin to go effective 30 days later. So it does have impact. The Maisa has impact, even though it's not immediate, but in a delayed fashion, there is an effectiveness to his action. And so therefore, it's more than just a verbal engagement. There is a masa here. So then why is it called it a dibor? Because it's not a real action. The action is only a real action when it becomes effective. That happens at the 30-day point. So even though you put the action in motion now, it only becomes effective in 30 days. So it's not a real masa. On the other hand, it is a masa that upgrades the dibor here to more than a simple dibor. And so what Reish Lakish says is, that's true by the case of truma, you could unwind the agency. Even though it's interesting what would have happened according to the Havamina here, that if you put an agent into place, you would not be able to unwind it, which is an amazing concept. That if you instruct an agent to do something, you can't pull the plug on the agent. Why not? The only reason they can function is because of an agent. So you would have to say, I think Pnei Yeshua suggests over here, that it's somewhat of a gzera tekatuv. That shlucho shel adam kemoto. If you put someone in action as a shliach, then you can't retract it unless you go to Beit Din, basically, and unwind it. You need a formal type of action or activity to unwind it. Even though you could have used an informal one to engage the person as an agent, to unwind it, you would need much more of a formal action. So it's interesting, but that there is some sort of imbalance there in terms of agency. The Gemara Kamash 1 is that maybe in just pure agency or in cases where it's just verbal instructions, you can unwind the verbal instructions. But what you can't do is when there's a verbal instruction that involves some sort of activity associated with it, not a full-fledged activity, but some sort of activity, then you can't have a simple dibor unwind it according to Reish Lakish. V'lo'ati dibor umevato masa, because a verbal retraction can unwind action. So, etevei, ha-shaleach get li ishto, v'igia b'shliach. He sends a bill of divorce to his wife with a shliach, and he caught up with the shliach. Osha shalach harav shliach. He sent another agent after the first agent. The bill of divorce that I gave to you, I'm nullifying it. No go anymore. Arizeh batel. You can stop it. Va netinat get liyad shliach, dechi netinat maod liyad ishat. Dami. When you hand over the get to the shliach to go and deliver to the woman, that is a maaseh. So why isn't that equivalent to the maaseh when you give the money to the woman in order to generate the kiddushin? If that's the case, why is it that a dibor can't unwind it? Now, it's obvious here that there's not a real maaseh over here because the get only goes effective when it reaches the woman herself. But it's a similar type of quasi-maaseh, which is that over here you handed the get to the shliach, which begins the process by which the get will get to that individual. So you just told me that a subpar maaseh strengthens the dibur to the point where you can't reverse it. So maybe over here as well, that subpar maaseh will be strong enough again to block your ability to unwind it. And again, here the same question we said before, how could you possibly have agency that you can't unwind? The answer is maybe you can. That you might need something much stronger to unwind it than simply retracting the agency. So he differentiates in the cases and says, like we just suggested over here, is that when it comes to the get, that is simply instructions. The handing of the get over to the shliach is no more a maise than him instructing the agent to take the bill of divorce to the woman. If he had not handed it to her, the agent picked it up and took it, it would have been the same thing. I mean, that all he's doing is giving a dibur over here. There's no action or real action that takes place. An action has to have what we call halachic impact. And over here, the giving of the get to the shliach has no halachic impact. The shliach is the shliach because you verbally instruct him to do so. In the case of the kiddushin, that's not true. Your giving of the money to the woman has a halachic impact. Well, after 30 days, but it does have a halachic impact, and therefore it's deemed to be a maaseh or enough of a maaseh that you can't unwind it. So ata dibur mevatel dibur, and therefore in this case, your verbal retraction is sufficient to unwind the verbal instruction. Etavei Reish Lakish the Rabbi Yochanan. So now we reverse the tables, and Reish Lakish now starts to challenge Rabbi Yochanan from a Mishnah in Kelim, which is kolai kelim yordim l'day tumatam b'machshava. Any kli can become tamei, or the more important part here is that it can be primed to be mikabel tumah, which means that it could be mukshar the kabel tumah, that it could be readied now to accept tumah. The way Rashi explains it over here, we're dealing with something called gomei kelim, unfinished utensils. A utensil is not mikabel tumah until it is a finished or completed utensil. So if you have intent for using this item for a particular purpose, until its utility for that particular purpose comes into effect, the kli will not be mikabel tumah because you haven't finished the kli. So now there are certain kelim or certain items that along the way, there are stages by which it could be a utensil used for something else. But if you intended it for something in a final stage, it won't become tamei. So for instance, you have a hides of the animals. So if you intend to use them for a shoe, then the hides are not good enough to be mikabel tumah until they're cut, till they're shaped, till they're dyed, till they're put together with the sole of the shoe. That's when they'll be mikabel tumah, because that's the finishing touch on that kli. On the other hand, if you wanted to use that for a throw on your couch, then at this point it's already done. So what happens here is, if he has intent to use it for a shoe, and then all of a sudden he says, you know what, maybe I'm going to use this for a throw on my couch, he's now changed the status of this kli from being something that was in the middle of a process to it finalized or finished kli. So that's what it says here. Kol kelim yordim l'day tumatan b'machshava. If you think to use it immediately, that's sufficient to create a gemar malocha, and then this item can be mikabel tumah in the future. Your machshirit, the kabel tumah, meaning that you make it now available and primed to accept tumah. Ve'no lim miday mitumatan ela b'shinui maaseh. The only way to change that and now extend it so that it's not a finished kli is that you have to act on it. You have to do something. So Rashi gives examples, again, similar to what we just said, that you have to, whether it's cut the leather, whether it's by wood, you have to sand the wood down. There is a new process that you could begin that would indicate that you're not finished. Over here, you can't simply think, you know, I want it to be a throw. No. I'm going to use it for shoes now. That won't work. The machshava allows you to bring it into the muksha, the kabel tumah. It doesn't allow you to take it out, which is that you need a maisa now. Now, either you have to sand it down, you have to start cutting into the leather in order to indicate that you're going to continue on with the processing, and that takes away its ha'ekshe l'kabel tumah, or, as Rashi notes over here, it removes, if it became tameh, you can remove its tumah by changing the kli itself. If you destroy the kli, how do you destroy kli? You can make it into something else. You change the dynamic of the kli. All of those can only happen through a maaseh, because maaseh mosim yad maaseh, an action can unwind an action, umiyad machshava, or unwind a thought, or a dibur, or some verbal instruction. Machshava, in a motziya lo miyad maaseh, a machshava clearly can't unwind an action, but also lo miyad machshava, it also cannot unwind another machshava. So that's why you can get something to be a kli just through a machshava or through dibur. What you can't do is make it ois kli, take it out of being a kli, simply through machshava. So even though over here, what you have is dibur motzimi de dibur, and you see that it fails, or machshava motzimi de machshava, and it doesn't work. And so this Reish Lakish says is a proof to me against Rabbi Yochanan. So Gemara says, "Bishlam amiyad maseh lo mafka." I understand why machshava can't unwind a maseh. To lo ati dibur umavatel maseh, because a dibur can't come and be mavatel a maseh. Eli miyad machshava miutabik. At least from a machshava, it should back off, or it should be able to be unwound over here, because you have an equal level that is trying to unwind. Like Rabbi Yochanan says, dibur is motzimi de dibur. Why can't machshava be motzimi de machshava? So that's a problem for Rabbi Yochanan. Gemara says, "Shani machshava de tuma v'chi maaseh domi." That machshava of tuma is different because it's like an action, it's like an activity. Now the truth is that this will start to present the problem for Reish Lakish as well, which is that Reish Lakish says is that dibur is motzimi de dibur as long as there is no maaseh involved with that first dibur. So when Reish Lakish asks the question of Yochanan from Kelim, in essence, it's a question on himself as well, because here it says, "Ein machshava motzi midei machshava," which Reish Lakish believes would be the case. So either we have to say that the Eitaveh here is not from Reish Lakish to Rabbi Yochanan, but Stam an Eitaveh. Or what you have to suggest is that, as we mentioned before, that when Reish Lakish says that Dibur is not motzi midei Dibur, that's his opinion. When he answers here that it can't be motzi midei Dibur mamaseh, he's just answering within the sheet of Rabbi Yochanan, but he himself does not hold like that. Or you have to say that Reish Lakish believes that, in the case of Kelim, that his makshava is a maseh, but different than that of Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan believes the makshava is at the level of a full-fledged maseh, whereas Reish Lakish believes that it's just a maiseh zutar, and that's what will lead to the difference in their opinions. Uka de Rav Papa, and that is like this din of Rav Papa, the Rav Papa Rami. Rav Papa says that there is a stira in the kri and the ktiv. Tiv, the pasuk says, ki itain. But yet, vikarinan, but we read it ki yutan. The difference between yitain and yutan is the active versus the passive form of the verb. Ki yitain means I actively place something on it. Yutan is that something was placed on this object. Over here again, we're talking about heksha, the kabutuma, we're talking about water washing over fruits or items in order to be maksha them, the kabutuma. So the pasuk is written ki itain, which seemingly indicates you have to wash them actively in order for them to become primed and mukshal the kabel tuma. On the other hand, the reading of the pasuk is ki utan. If water gets on them, that's enough that they are mukshal the kabel tuma. Haketzad, how do I reconcile this stira? Ki utan dumya de ki itain. That it has to be that it came on passively the way that you would have done it actively. Ma'itain de nechle. Just like when you place it on it intentionally, it's because you want it to be that way. So too, af yutan de nechle. So too, if it happens passively, it has to be something that you want. That is the same principle that we see all over Shas with regards to heksher the kabel tuma, that something is only mukshar the kabel tuma if the individual wants it to be washed or wants whatever happened to have happened. And that's based on this rapapa. Ki yutan would indicate no matter how the water got there, it's mukshar the kabel tuma. Ki itain says only if you actively place it on it would it be mukshar the kabel tuma. The reconciliation of the two of them says it doesn't matter how the water got there as long as you're happy with the fact that the water got there, which is that it doesn't matter if it's itain or yutan as long as in the end it looks like itain, which means that in the end it must be that you are happy with whatever happened even though you didn't actively do it but you did it passively. But what you see here is that a yutan, a passive action, is deemed as if itain, as if you put it on there actively. So you see in Tuma, even a machshava of saying, oh, I'm happy with the fact that it rained on these fruit and it cleaned them, that's enough to be considered as if ki itain, as if you actively placed it on top of that. By the way, this is also corroborates what Tosfot said earlier in the Masechta in many places in Shas, when we have Eim LaMikra and Eim LaMisoret. We have a machloket in these places as to whether which is more binding. Is it Eim LaMikra or Eim LaMisoret? Over here, we see that they accept both of them. We accept Eim LaMisoret the way that it's written, ki itain, and Eim LaMikra the way that it's read as ki yutan. And despite that fact, right, we reconcile both of them. What happened to this idea that we either go Eim LaMikra, Eim LaMisoret? So Tosfos claims that that's only true when they are mutually exclusive, when there's no way to reconcile the two of them, or that the drusha, by definition, would upend the other drusha. But if you have a way to reconcile them, everybody's willing to accept both, Eim LaMikra, Eim LaMisoret, that we're fine with. Tosafot over here asks an interesting question about the case of Truma versus Rabbi Yochanan, because there's a possibility that the Truma that was taken off was taken off by the shliach ayudei machshava, because you're allowed to be separate truma ayudei omed ubemachshava, and that means that once the truma is taken off, the baal bayit has no way to unwind it. So therefore, the machshava, the baal bayit now cannot unwind the machshava of the shliach. Why not? According to Rabbi Yochanan, it should work. So Tosu gives the obvious answer, which is that when through machshava he's mafish the truma, that's clearly deemed as an action. It's the equivalent of separating out the truma. Because it says, v'nechshav lachem, that it's considered like as if you took off the truma. And therefore your machshava is as if you were taram b'yadayim, as if you took it off actively. And therefore, that's why he can't unwind it. Whereas by the case of truma, by the gebei truma, in a machshava mitamato, aval mi bi'ato lidei torat kabbalat truma. That in the case of the truma, your machshava doesn't make it tameh, it just primes it to be mukhsha the kabbal truma. And that you could be mevatel, because you can be mevatel hechsher the kabel tuma, and therefore by a daya maser or other action afterwards you can unwind it. So that's the difference between the case of tuma and the case of truma. That even though both of them can be done through machshava, the resultant action that is done through the machshava is slightly different. By the case of truma, it's like a full fledged action that you cannot unwind. It's done. It's done. As over here, since it's not an action that has ramifications immediately, because it's just mukhsha the kabel tuma, it's not accepting the tuma now, therefore you can unwind it through a maaseh, you can change the status of the item to be ois, mukhsha the kabel tuma, and that would work through a maaseh, and that's why it's different in the case of truma. Gemara continues, Rav Zvid matne the hashmaita ta'aha. Rav Zvid had this argument of Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan placed on another issue, not the issue of our Mishnah, where the question came up is, can she back out in the 30 days after she accepted the Kiddushin? She came back out of the Kiddushin. He says it referenced this case. She gave permission to an agent to be mekadesh her on her behalf. And she went and accepted Kiddushin by herself, on her own, from another party. If her acceptance of the Kiddushin preceded that of the Shliach, Kiddushia Kiddushin, then she's married based on her acceptance. Im shel shlucha kadmo, if those of the agent preceded hers, ain Kiddushia Kiddushin, then her Kiddushin don't work. The Shliach's works. Lo kitcha tatzma, v'chazra ba'mahu. The Gemara is clear when she takes an action to undermine the agency, that she clearly can override the agency. She accepts Kiddushin, then she clearly blocks the agent from carrying out his agency because she's already married. But what happens if she takes no action but simply verbally retracts the agency here and says, I don't want this individual to be my agent anymore? Is that enough? Mahu. So this is where Rav Zvid says that this is where the machulka de Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish comes up. So Rabbi Yochanan Amar Chuzeret, she has a right to back out. Reish Lakish Amar, ain't no Chuzeret. So it says she can't back out. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Chuzeret ati dibur mevatel dibur. Just like she engaged the agent verbally, she can disengage the agent verbally. She can't back out of it. Because verbal instructions cannot simply be unwound by verbal instructions. So now again, the same questions that we brought before, I'll run through them because they're identical to before. Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish, Bitel. If he nullified the agency of the one who he sent to send to take off Truma, imach lo taram bitel, if it's prior to his taking off the truma, ein trumato truma, then it doesn't work. So you can see he can verbally retract the agency of this person going to take off truma. This is a case where the baal bayit jumped the gun and took off the truma himself. That's a masa. So it's not that he simply retracted the verbal instructions to the shliach, but it's a case where he actually did something about it. He went and took off truma. Now, what it comes obvious from here, and Tosfot notes it with regards to the case that we're bringing over here, you can see that in the Tosfot, lo kitcha atzma v'chazra ba, how did she retract it? How did she renege on the agency? And the same is true here by the truma. Nira lefaresh, you have to say, v'chazra ba b'lo amira l'shliach. That the retraction was done without informing the agent. Tosfot says that it's clear here that if she goes and tells the agent, I don't want you accepting Kiddushin on my behalf, then we're done. Everybody agrees that we're over because she pulled the agency. The only question really arises in the case where she retracts the agency but never informs the agent that the agency was retracted, or she never goes to the agent himself, or maybe according to Pnei Yeshua, she never goes to Beit Din and backs out the agency. So it's clear here that either if she tells the agent that the agency is over, and same by the Truma, if he tells the agent the agency is over, it's over. Or maybe if you demand that they go to Beit Din and retract it, that would work. Our problem here is that they simply did it to themselves. They simply said, you know what? No more agency. Or they did it in front of Beit Din, whatever it is that they did to retract the agency, they didn't do it in a formal manner. And the question is, can they do that? Can the agency be terminated in that way? Rabbi Yochanan says, from Truma, you see that it can be terminated in that way. Rabbi Shlomo says, no. The case there is the termination happened because he acted. And when he acted, it, by definition, he also retracted the agency because he jumped the gun, similar to the case of the Kiddushin. Where if the woman accepts Kiddushin, there's no bigger rejection of the agency than that. Tosfos notes over here, you couldn't answer like they answered before. They said, before we said, shiny netinat ma'ot of Kiddushin, because it's masadamli. That's how we answered before. But over here, there's no giving of ma'ot, because the woman is the acceptor of the Kiddushin, and so therefore there's no ma'ase over here. In the previous way we were reading it, it was a case where there was money given and there was a ma'ase done, and therefore we answered there's a difference to the Kiddushin than the case of Truma. We left the case of Truma in place. Over here, we can't answer that, because here the woman is the acceptor of the Kiddushin, and there was no action. She just pointed an agent to accept on her behalf. Since there's no ma'ase, you can't argue that this is a case of ma'ase, and that's why it's different. So therefore, the Gemara went the other way and said that the case of Truma was a ma'ase, which is where he actually intervened and took off the Truma himself. Eifei Reish Lakish the Rabbi Yochanan. Kol HaKelim Yodim Lidei Tumatam B'machshava V'Enolim Mitumatam Ela B'Shinoi Ma'aseh. So again, ma'aseh motzim Yedad ma'aseh, an action can unwind an action. U'miyad Machshava, or a thought process. So here, where a thought can bring something into being Machshav L'Kabel Tuma, then it can only be unwound by a ma'aseh. On the other hand, a thought or a dibur cannot unwind even another thought or dibur, or as well as, of course, it can't unwind a maaseh. That makes sense. Why can't it back out a makshava, back out another makshava? Because there, makshava is different, because by tuma, makshava has a status like a maaseh. Like we just saw before in Rapapa, the Rapapa Ramik Tiv Ki Itain, Vikrinan Ki Utan. Had Ketzat? Ki Utan, Dumiya the Ki Itain. That the Utan is just like the Itain, Ma Itain de Nechele, Af Utan, Nami de Nechele. And so therefore, even though it was done passively, when you agree to it or think positively about what happened, it makes it as if you put it on there actively. And so we see that a Makshava by Tuma has a din like Maaseh. Eitve Rabbi Yochanan Reshlakash, Shleach get the Ishto, Vigia Bishliach. He sends a get to his wife, and he catches up with the shliach. Oh, sheshalach acharav shliach. Or he sends a shliach after him to annul the agency. V'amalo get shenatati lecha batel hu. The get that I gave to you, nullified, no good. Hare ze batel. It works. Tiyufta, the Reish Lakish tiyufta. That is a strong refutation of Reish Lakish's position, because here you have the same instructions that were given can be unwound by a similar nature of instruction. A verbal instruction is unwound by a verbal retraction. And that's enough, and that proves Rabbi Yochanan's point, that it can be that a dibur is motzi midei dibur. In the previous case, Reish Lakish was okay, because Reish Lakish could differentiate between kiddushin and a get. By kiddushin there is a maise, by get there is no maise. But over here, where the case that Rav Zvid brings as being the machloket is a case where there is no mas. It's a case of a shliach get. And so if that's the case, here you can't make that distinction. The same way we couldn't answer Truma that way, we can't answer this case that way. And now this is a problem for Reish Lakish, because here the Mishnah makes it clear that dibur is motzi midei dibur. So Mar says, Behilchata, kavate de Rabbi Yochanan, afilu bikamaita. The law is like Rabbi Yochanan, obviously in this case, because we have a tiyufta on Reish Lakish. But not only that, the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan in the first case where we did not have a tiyufta on Reish Lakish. Also over there, the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan that a dibur is motzi midei dibur. That means that she can walk away from the kiddushin after she accepted that. She can reject them if it's before the 30-day window expires. So now, Gemara says, V'afakav v'ikal ha-meymar, shayni netinat ma'ot li'adishad, v'kama sedami. Wait, the case over there, Reish Lakish had a good defense of his position, because you could argue that kiddushin is different, because kiddushin is like a maaseh. V'lochi ati dibur mavatel dibur. Despite that fact, we say that the dibur is mavatel the dibur. So therefore, either you have to say one of two things. Either that it's not a maaseh, and that it's really just the dibur being motzimi de dibur, or if we accept Reish Lakish and say that it is a maaseh, it's a maaseh zuta. It's a small maaseh. A small maaseh is not enough to reinforce the dibur to the point where you can't unwind or retract it through a dibur. A big maisa, everybody would agree. Like the case in Kelim, you can't unwind that. So where something's a strong maisa, like the case of Tuma, and even there by Machshava, where the Torah deems it to be a full-fledged maisa, over there you can't unwind it with Zibur. Over here, where the maisa is a maisa that will go effective at a later date, and it's a small maisa, over there that's not enough to influence the situation to say that this is not Zibur anymore. And therefore, Dibur is Mvatel Dibur in this case. All right, so what you have to say is, before we define the Maaseh Zuta as being when it's a Maaseh and when it's only a Machshava, as being when it has a halachic significance. So therefore, when it has a halachic significance, it's considered to be a Maaseh. Where it doesn't have a halachic significance, it's not a Maaseh. That's why we said Kiddushin, where it's the deferred Kiddushin is a Maaseh, but by the get, where you tell the Shleach, take the get, even though you handed the get to him, it's not a Maaseh because there's no halachic significance to it. What we're now defining is that it's not only halachic significance, it has to have immediate halachic impact to be considered a maisa. Which is that by the case of Tuma, there's immediate impact to your makshava, and therefore it's deemed to be a maisa because your makshava has halachic impact immediately. Over here, the maisa is an action now, but its halachic impact is deferred to later. And that'll be a maisa zuta, and that's what we're redefining now, that a maisa zuta, and which will not undermine it, is a case where it might have halachic significance in the future, but has no halachic significance now. On the other hand, a maisa that has machshavo, that has halachic impact immediately and is deemed to be a maisa, that's a maisa gogo, and that you can unwind through dibur. So Gemara says, kasha yochata yochata. Now we have a problem because we have a conflict between two principles of halacha. Amar tilchata Rabbi Yochanan. First of all, you say halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan, which in general, the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan over Reish Lakish. V'kaimel ha'yochata k'Rab Nachman. We also have a principle that the halacha is like Rab Nachman. Now, not only is generally the halacha is like Rab Nachman in cases of adjudication or dinim, because he was a dayan, and therefore he carries extra weight in issues of dayanut, never the halacha is like Rab Nachman, or maybe because here they say specifically the halacha is like Rab Nachman in this case, Nibailu, ma'o shi'achzor mi'yagareish bo. This get that he nullified, can he utilize the get? I mean, there are two components here. There was the agency to take this bill of divorce and divorce this woman. He pulled the plug on that clearly. But he also said, a get batel. The get is batel. Now, when he does that, does he also ruin the get to the point where he can no longer utilize this get? Rav Nachman Amar, Chozer Megareish Bo. The get is still a good get. But bill of divorce is still a bill of divorce. You didn't change that. But you just annulled the agency. 10 minutes later, he decides he wants to use his get. He can use it and divorce the woman with it. Rosheshit Amar, Eino Chozer Megareish Bo. Rosheshit says that when you're mevatel the agency, not only you're mevatel the agency, you also ruin the bill of divorce in that case. Kaimelon Eluchot talk about Dei Rav Nachman. We say here the halacha is like Rav Nachman. So now you have a problem because in one case we're saying that your dibor is strong enough to undermine the agency. But on the other hand, according to Rav Nachman, we're saying that your dibor is not strong enough to be mevatel the get. By setting up nature, I gave you the answer already, which is, the dibur is strong enough to unwind his verbal instructions, so there's a verbal objection. Torah get, lo batle, but he didn't ruin the get. Now, there are two different versions of this Gemara. Tosfot already notes this, that the way our Gemara concludes over here is, that mitkora get, lo batle. Because he did not intend to be mevatel the bill of divorce, all he did was annul the agency, the bill of divorce stays intact. But that implies that if he intended to be mevatel the get, he would be able to be mevatel the get. It simply has to do with what he's thinking. Here, he just wanted to ruin the agency, that he did. But the get, he left intact. Had he wanted to ruin the get, he could have ruined the get as well if he actively did it. He just didn't. The way the Gemara ends in Gittin is, Gita gufei mika batel. Can you really be mevatel the get? According to that Gemara, as Tosfos knows here, there's no way to be mevatel the get. A get is a get because it was written properly, had a deem sign on it, and it's a kosher get. You can't change the fact that this is a bill of divorce because no matter what you say or no matter what, unless you rip it up, there's no way to change the fact that this is a bill of divorce because it's a kosher bill of divorce. It's missing the action of giving it to the woman. But the bill of divorce itself, there's nothing wrong with it. You can't change that. And so therefore, depending on which girsa you have, the girsa of our Gemara indicates that you could be mevatel the get if you so choose. Whereas the Gemara in Gittin's conclusion seems to indicate that you can't be mevatel it no matter how hard you try. You can't change the fact that it's a bill of divorce. Right, if you tear it up, obviously it's not a bill of divorce anymore. Meaning that the question of whether the get is a good get is separate from when you divorce with it. All right, Mekudesh Ed L'Sheni. So we said here that in the case where he defers the effectiveness of the Kiddushin and some guy comes in and is Mekadesh her in the interim, that the second guy holds on to the Kiddushin. Amarab mikudesh l'sheni le'olam. Permanently married to the second guy. His kedushin come and block the ability of the first kedushin to take effect, and he's the one who's married to her forever. Shmuel amar mikudesh l'sheni ad lamed yom. She's married to this individual until the 30th day. And achar lamed yom pake kedushay sheni v'gamri kedushay rishon. At the 30-day point, the first guy's kedushin go effective, and the second guy's knocked out of the picture. How did the second kiddushin disappear? How do you unwind kiddushin? Kiddushin go into effect. The only way to unwind them is a get. Over here, all of a sudden they're disappearing 30 days in. All of a sudden they're gone. Samarlay of Yosef. Mara resha matni law pekashule. You read this statement on the first half of the Mishnah, or you read this Machloket Rav and Shmuel on the first half of the Mishnah, therefore you ran into a problem. Rav Yehuda seifa matni la, but Rav Yehuda read it on the latter half of the Mishnah, v'lo kashle, and therefore he didn't have a problem. Me'achshav l'achar shloshim yom, that's the second half of the Mishnah, where he says, the kedushin are effective from now until 30 days. Amar Rav mikudeshet v'enu mikudeshet le'olam. Rav says it's a safek kedushin forever. Shmuel amar mikudeshet v'enu mikudeshet elad yom ed yom. Until 30 days, we have a safek. V'achar lamed pake kedushay sheni v'gamrei kedushay rishon. Once you hit the 30-day mark, there's no more questions, and the first guy's kedushin go effective. Done is done, and he goes effective on that day. So the safek only exists in the first 30 days. Now the safek exists because the possibility of the guy will pass away, and we won't hit the 30-day point. But once we reach the 30-day point, there's no longer a safek that his kedushin are the kedushin that are effective here. Rav misfekele. Rav has a safek here. Ita na'a havai, ichazara havai. He's not sure. When you say ma'akshav v'achar shloshim yom, is that a condition which says that the kedushin are effective immediately if we reach the 30-day point? Both of us are around at 30 days, then the kedushin go effective today. On the other hand, the other possibility is that he said me'akshav, and he says, achar shloshim yom. Obviously he didn't do the na'a. He just said achar shloshim yom, but maybe that's what he was doing. He was officially thinking I'll be effective, and he says, you know what, let's wait 30 days on that. So we don't know which one is it. Is it a tnai, a condition, which means that retroactively they're effective from the day that he gave the kiddushin? Or is it a deferment now, because he retracted it and says, achar shloshim yom. So because of that safek, he's permanently in this problem, which is, they're permanently in this situation, which is that if it was a tnai, then the first guy's married. If it was a chazara, then the second guy's married. So now I have a safek for the rest of their life. I have this safek as to whether she's married to the first guy or the second guy, and you have to get a get from both or one of the other, depending on who she wants to be married to. The Shmuel, pshitale de tana havai. Shmuel thinks that it's clear that this was a condition. And therefore, there is a question as to whether it will go effective. But once it's effective, it's clear to us that it's effective retroactively. Which means that, as soon as you hit the 30-day point, it's clear that the kedushin were effective immediately, and therefore, she's married to the first guy, because he had the first kedushin. On the other hand, if he doesn't reach the 30-day point, then she'll be married to the second guy because the first kedushin never were effective. So the safek only exists until 30 days. But once you cross over the 30 days, it went retroactively effective, and it's clear who it is. Upulta dehani tanei, and this is similar to another machloket tanaim, the Tanya. Me'ayom alachar mitag, says this is a get from today until after I die. Get veinu get. Divrei chachamim. The chachamim say you have a safek get here. Rabbi Omer kazeh get. That's a full-fledged get. I mean, that seemingly it's the same machloket, which is the chamim say we're not sure if that was a retraction or if it was a condition, a tanai. Whereas Rabbi says there was clearly a tanai and therefore it's a get. B'neimah Rav halacha kirabbanan. So why doesn't Rav just say the halacha is like the rabbanan? Because his position follows that of the rabbanan, that we have a safek forever. B'neimah Shmuel halacha kirabbi. And Shmuel said it should say the halacha is like Rabbi. If we're paralleling these machlokot, and those are Tanaim, why are they stating them as their own opinions, these Amoraim? They should just say, Alocha kedatana. Tricha. Dilo amar Rav Alocha kerabona. And Hed Rav said, Alocha sargabona. Avamina hatam del rechoka kaate. Over there where he's trying to divorce her, there we say that it's a safek. Avahocha del rechova kaate. Over here he's trying to marry her. Ema modele shmo de tana habai. Over here then maybe it's clearly a condition. Because in the case where he's trying to divorce, there we have suspicions as to whether he's trying to do it immediately or maybe delay a little bit in the divorce. Okay, so he's trying to marry her and bring her in, then the faster the better. And maybe over there he would agree with Shmuel. V'yamar Shmuel locha kerabbi. And if Shmuel had said the locha's like Rabbi, how I mean, how the ain't get lachar mita. The reason Rabbi says it over there is because it's obvious that it's not a retraction, because if it was a retraction, he's making the get after he's dead. You can't have a get after he's dead. So it's obvious there that it's a tnai and not a retraction. Here there is a possibility of kedushin going effective after 30 days. Therefore, it's tzricha. Therefore, we don't have them saying that locha is like that tana, but stating their opinions clearly so that we see that their opinion applies here even by kedushin, and not just by the case of kitin where they would align with these tanaim. So Amar Abayi, ulutamei the Rav. One guy comes along and says, we are married from today until after 30 days. We're married from today and after 20 days. That we're married from today until after 10 days. So now, Rashi points out that the last guy doesn't really matter. It's just because of the literary style of them, the Braita, that it's brought in this manner. But technically the last guy could have just said, Hariyat Mekadesh Ali, straight up. So then the Gemara says, Mirishom Achron Tzricha Get. From the first one and the last one, she needs a get. Mam Tzai and a Tzricha Get. From the middle one, she doesn't need a get. Because, Monofshach. Itna Ahavi. If these are conditions when you say Me'achshav, the Kama Kedushe. Then the first guy was the first one in there. And his Kedushin are effective the earliest. Tahana Chlav Kedushin. And therefore, the second one and the third one's Kedushin are meaningless. If it is a retraction, then the Batra Kedushe. Then the latter ones, or the last ones, are Kedushin because he was the one who went effective first. Either because he said after 10 days, or after he said immediately. Either way that Rashi says it. But he's the first one to go effective, and therefore, he'd be married. Then the first guy and the second guy, they didn't go effective. They went effective afterwards. It's no good. Mar says, pshita. But I mean, it's so obvious what you're telling me. Malutei mahai lishna mashma tana o mashma chazara. The lashon me'achshav bi'ad could mean a tnai or could mean a chazara. And maybe we could argue that it mixes and matches. For some people it means chazara, for some people it mixes a tnai. And that means that we will interpret it differently for each person. And never she would need a get even from the middle guy. Because we'll say that the first guy was a chazara, the second guy was a tnai, and then the third guy went and married her. Well, then in that case, she needs a get from the second guy, because if it's a tanai, he was the first one to get married. He was effective first. So Gemara is Kamash Malan, that we interpret it consistently across the board. That if we think it's a tanai for all of them. If we think that it's a chazara for all of them, we're not going to mix and match the definition. We're uncertain about the definition. But once we know the definition, or we assume one definition, we apply it equally across the board. And therefore, the emtsai is not in the safek that we have over here. Okay, we're going to stop here. It's 8 lines down on the top of Samoch Amud Aleph.